seconds. Trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sticks it inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now live via Zoom is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Gearing up for a work trip to the West Coast. Should be landing around 2:30 and then finding some way to watch this freaking game.
Because
it's going to be a whole thing. I'm sure with my boss is going to want to do some team building dinners and all that stuff. And I'm going to be like, can we find a bar? Any sports bar, please? So I can not be a part of this at all and just watch. So, yeah, well, that's where I'm at.
Well, the beautiful thing is not only has 82 games passed and the Cleveland Cavaliers are still playing basketball, we are back in the postseason. It's going to be on national TV, so it's not going to be as difficult for you to find a place to view the game. So fingers crossed for you on that work trip. But I could not be more excited to have the Cavs back in the postseason. We were hoping before the year that the Cavs could work their way into the play-in. Obviously, it took a different route than we were expecting. But the Cavs are now in position to face a major test against the Brooklyn Nets, who they just lost to on Friday. News came down earlier before we recorded that Jared Allen will be missing this game, unfortunately.
That's official. I must have missed that.
Yeah, he has officially been ruled out for Tuesday's game. So that's unfortunate. But, you know, the Cavs did get Evan Mobley back. They've been playing a little bit better, obviously, against the Bucks G League team. But, you know, I thought even in the Brooklyn game, they played a whole lot better than we have seen recently. Obviously, the tough start where I think the team looked a little bit tight contributed to the team losing. But I think that the experience of going through that game in such an important matchup with the playoff seeding on the line, I think that's actually going to help prepare the Cavs for this test that they have on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, ultimately, it is, you know, this isn't quite playoffs, but I suspect that the Cavs advanced scouting teams and all that have been kind of prepping for Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can say the same thing for Brooklyn with the Cavs. Now, it's not like we have a ton of time to install a bunch of new sets and find specific things to attack in terms of practice time, but I do hope that that prep time will have served the Cavs. I hope they bet on Brooklyn because, you know, that is, you know, Steve Jones was talking about this on his Twitter feed. You know, a lot of people forget that before Steve Jones ran one of the best podcasts out there, he did work for an NBA team. And, you know, the way that he kind of talked about the guessing game that these coaching staffs have to play in terms of who they're scouting at this time of year and how, you know, you kind of have to pick. Like, you're not going to do a comprehensive scout on all three potential opponents in time. So I'm hoping that they kind of took their swing at Brooklyn. I hope that they can kind of figure something out, because I think it's without a doubt the talent matchup is not on their side here, Justin. So they're going to have to do some weird stuff to stymie the Nets attack, and then they're going to have to run some crispy offense, my friend, because you're not holding this team to 93 points.
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, the thing they really need to do is take better care of the little things. Like, you look at that game, there were a few careless turnovers that they had, giving up too many offensive rebounds. Like, as funny as this is, just kind of looking at the history of this team, Andre Drummond is going to be an issue in this matchup, especially with Jared Allen out of the lineup. Like, he is someone that can generate a lot of second chance opportunities. And when you have a team with talented scorers like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, that can hit shots off of perfect defense, you don't want one of those misses to turn into another possession out of them. And honestly, even Seth Curry is an incredibly effective role player. So they're going to have their hands full. Was there anything in that game that kind of stood out to you that you really liked that the Cavs kind of brought from a game plan standpoint in terms of facing the Nets?
I don't know if it's something I liked as much as an obvious observation. I think Darius can just get his against this team. I think they have very little in the way of things that will slow him down. You know, they don't have the big wings that they can just throw on him and say, hey, we're going to make you see through, you know, a field of trees to make any pass that you want. I mean, they have to play Irving or Curry pretty much at all times. And then their backup guard is Patty Mills. They're small on the perimeter in the same way that the Cavs are kind of small on the perimeter. So I think that really, I think this game in a way is actually about the offensive end for the Cavs. I think they've got to get consistently good looks. And when they're open, they gotta knock those looks down. In that first Nets game, or in that Nets game last Friday, they shot 29% from three, only hit 8 threes on 27 attempts. It's not going to do it. You're going to need to convert on opportunities that this Nets team will give you, because they'll give them to you. They had 20 turnovers against Indy. So they're not exactly a well-oiled machine, and their focus, frankly, is not always very good.
I agree. And one of the guys that stands out to me, and it stood out in Friday's game as well, is Caris LeVert, because LeVert was able to get by Seth Curry consistently. And early in that game, he would get to the rim and he was looking to pass a little too frequently. He had multiple kickouts to Lamar Stevens, which I understand that he's open in that situation, but you need to go up and actually attack the rim. And I think there's a real opportunity for Caris LeVert to apply and consistently apply pressure at the rim and finishing, because that's how the Nets started to get in foul trouble in Friday's game. And if you're looking for ways to generate offense, attacking guards that, I mean, the limitations of Seth Curry are pretty obvious on the defensive end of the floor. Kyrie can play better defense at times, but I'm not expecting game seven Kyrie type efforts out of him on the defensive end. And
they frankly, also just don't have anywhere one else to go to, you know, like who they got. Like the only wing they have with size is Kessler Edwards, who, you know, is a rookie and, you know, not exactly a stalwart defensive stopper. So, like, I just think that their options are really, really limited defensively. Like I think there's going to be people that poke at Steve Nash's coaching, but this roster is kind of only composed to win one way.
Yeah, they really are. And they will, again, be without Ben Simmons throughout the play-in tournament, but there is speculation that he will be available for the start of the first round, which is interesting. One change for the Nets lineup in comparison to Friday's game is Goran Dragic is now out of health and safety protocol, so he will be available to play. I don't know if they're going to go to him. That's always tricky when you've been off for a little bit of time and you got some rust.
He just doesn't solve much for them, in my opinion. Like at this stage of his career, I feel like Seth Curry is just as good of a, you know, backup lead ball handler.
Seth Curry's a much better player than him. Like he's so just flat out a much better player at this point.
And again, they just don't have a lot of, like, one thing that's nice about this Nets team, of course, is that they are, you know, they have a lot of replaceable production. Like you don't lose a lot when Curry goes to the bench because Patty Mills comes in. But again, stylistically, I think that they don't have a lot of versatility. And the Cavs have always had that this season. They can play Caris and Okoro on the wing, or they can put Markkanen at the three with Love at the four. Like, the Cavs are obviously also going to be making some major concessions. They can't play their best basketball with Jarrett not in the lineup. But there are ways offensively for them to consistently generate good looks.
I completely agree. And you know what's actually been kind of like weighing on me the last couple of days as I've been wrapping my head around the idea of the Cavs being in the play-in tournament? I think this, more than any other point of the season, and that's saying something, I think this is where you really miss Colin Sexton, because there are players that I mean, Utah would be a great example. I would say throughout the course of a regular season, Rudy Gobert is the more impactful player in terms of their floor and their win and loss record. But when you get into these type of scenarios, that's where a guy that can just go out and generate a bucket is so valuable. And Colin Sexton being able to do that at such a consistent level and such an efficient level and just the consistent pressure he applies. Like, we talked about how Caris LeVert kind of splits the difference in terms of the passing of Ricky and the scoring of Sexton, but he's not as good of a scorer as Sexton, and he doesn't necessarily have that same mentality to go out there. So I think it's going to be on Caris LeVert to be more assertive in this game. They definitely need that offense. But it's just one of those times where I'm like, I really wish Colin would have got this opportunity on this stage, because I think that this is an environment that is tailor-made for someone like him. I mean, you think back to the debut of the Nets Big Three when they added James Harden in Cleveland and the way that he was ready for that moment. And you saw on Friday, Garland was 100% ready for that moment. He had a fantastic game against the Nets, and having two guys that, you know, are ready for the moment, that are confident in what they can do, it just makes things so much easier, especially when you have a lot of quality role players that feed off of that kind of assertiveness and play better when you have a like an offensive catalyst that's going out there and creating opportunities.
Yeah, I mean, I think LeVert can do an approximation of it for sure. I think Sexton is, you know, objectively the more electrifying scorer, but, you know, for this Nets team, who just are, you know, they just don't put up, they don't play with a ton of intensity. I think Caris might be the kind of guy to get that kind of sleepy 25. And I do think his size actually really helps against this iteration of the Nets, because, you know, Harden, you know, for all his foibles, can kind of stick with guys okay in isolation. You know, it's really the off-ball stuff that he gets absolutely cooked on. Whereas, you know, I like that, the way that LeVert can kind of use his body to generate decent angles against weaker, smaller defenders. And I think that Seth kind of qualifies. And by the way, I also hope, I know we're going to, I am sure we are going to be box score hunt watching with Isaac, because he's been relatively invisible as of late. This is also a matchup that he should be able to generate good angles just on the drive with smaller, weaker defenders on his hip. And he's going to have to take advantage of those opportunities when he gets them if the Cavs want to have a legitimate shot here.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation where the Cavs absolutely need to get more out of their wings, both Isaac Okoro and Caris LeVert. Like, I think this is a game where you really need, like, you need Isaac to play like he has against Philadelphia earlier this year. Like, he's had some big games against better teams, and you just hope that he can kind of rise to the moment here, because this is one of those spots where, okay, we know that his defense brings a lot to the table. We saw what he did in the last two games against Kyrie, limiting him in his effectiveness as a scorer. Like, Kyrie dapped him up after the game in Cleveland because of the job he did. Against Brooklyn on Friday, he held them to basically 33% shooting. Like, he has done a really good job out there, but there are opportunities for him to be assertive as a cutter and to generate second chance opportunities and to get rebounds. Like, it's going to be a team effort without Jared Allen out there to secure those defensive rebounds. And he has a size and strength advantage against a lot of the Brooklyn guards. So you're going to need to crash the boards and make sure that you're valuing every single possession, because this is not a game, and these are not two players that you can afford to give those extra possessions to. The Cavs have to keep that at least even or close to it to have a shot in this game, because as good as Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant are, and as difficult as this is going to be without Colin Sexton, without Jared Allen, and without Dean Wade, who played really good defense against Kevin Durant in earlier matchups, this is still, like, I've completely lost my train of thought.
That's okay, Justin. You had a long night last night.
I did.
Didn't get a lot of sleep, so I'll cover you here. I do want to ask you this. So, obviously, I think this game will be won on the offensive side of the ball, but you can't absolutely get, you know, destroyed. You know, I think Okoro on Kyrie is the kind of the no-brainer choice. Kyrie isn't particularly good at drawing free throws, which is kind of Isaac's last remaining on-ball foible, is, you know, bad, untimely fouls against grifters. That's never been Kyrie's game. And he does way better on guards than on guys. Like, KD is, like, the worst matchup for Okoro, because he'll just turn around and shoot over him. What do you do with KD, and how many minutes do you play Lamar Stevens as compared to a guy like Lauri Markkanen, who will, I imagine, get the first crack at the guy?
That's a really good question, and I did remember my closing point for my last rant, which is basically
back to it.
As good as Brooklyn is, I do think they're vulnerable. I don't think they've played consistent 48-minute basketball, and they certainly can turn it on. But we saw, like, in the Magic game, like, if you play the flick the switch, you can be vulnerable to an upset, especially in a kind of a one-game scenario. So I think the Cavs absolutely have an opportunity here. As far as how much Lamar Stevens plays, it's a good question, because he was out there when the Cavs made their run against the Nets. He was a part of that run. But then there were other possessions earlier in the game where I thought he got a little lost defensively. There was multiple times where he flat out left Kevin Durant wide open at the three-point line, which you can't leave him. And Lowry was guilty of that as well. So I think it's going to be, in terms of how much he plays, I think it's going to be based off of performance, where I think you want to give him the opportunities. I think he would be among my first subs, because you know that Durant is going to play an extended first shift of the game. But based on how he's playing and what Jetty and some of the other bench guys are giving you, like, you might have to say, okay, he's not giving us what we wanted defensively in this game, and Jetty's at least giving us some juice on offense, so we're going to go a little more in that direction. One interesting idea I saw posed on Twitter was the thought of maybe starting Lamar over Isaac. Now, I don't think the Cavs are going to do that.
I guess that's the move.
Yeah, I think in that scenario, you would put LeVert on Kyrie and Lamar on KD.
If you had Jarrett back, maybe you would consider that, like, just to kind of change things up. But, like, I think you can't leave both Kyrie and KD without, like, elite stoppers on them. And I do not think Lamar is an elite stopper. I just feel like you're going to get
caught. And Lamar is also, he's a much better defender of forwards than he is guards. Yep. And Isaac's done such a good job on Kyrie. And, like, reality is, you can play perfect defense on Kevin Durant, and he is still going to hit those shots very frequently. So if you could at least disrupt Kyrie, like, obviously I was going to say, like, Kyrie is another guy that can make tough shots. We saw it many, many times when he was in the wine and gold. But at the same time, like, if you can really go out there and make him work, I think it impacts the ability for the rest of the Nets players to get engaged. Because similar to the Cavs, like, they rely on KD and Kyrie to generate opportunities for the rest of the supporting cast. So if you're making them work and making them battle for their own individual buckets, I think it impacts their ability to be as effective as playmakers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I do want to ask you this. Is there any world in which you put Evan Mobley on Kevin Durant?
I thought about it because I was thinking that Mobley's more mobile, obviously, than Lauri Markkanen. Maybe you put Lowry on Drummond. But at the same time, like, it just makes me a little bit nervous. Like, KD's ability to draw fouls, if Mobley gets in foul trouble, we are in a position where it's Moses Brown or Kevin Love and Lauri Markkanen. I don't think you can risk it, because Lowry got in some foul trouble against KD, and Mobley seems to be most effective as a help defender. So I just don't think you can expose Mobley to basically the Kawhi role of, you're going to guard Kevin Durant and we're going to have you shadow his minutes. As great as he is defensively, I don't think that that's what this situation calls for.
I think I would do shifts. I think that you look at a couple things. I think his defensive rebounding is probably his weakest point right now. So I really kind of don't want to stash him on Drummond for the whole game. I think Drummond will beat up on him. And I'm matching, as much as I can, if Love is out there, I'm putting him on Drummond.
Me too.
Because I think Love is one of the few guys who can actually fend him off and help secure defensive rebounds. It also is a nice, safe place to hide. because Bruce Brown hasn't missed a corner three in like 6 months, as far as I'm concerned. Every game I watch, he hits every single one, and he went 2 of 4 from three against the Cavs. He had 18 points in 40 minutes. He killed us. I think there is a degree of, I actually am not sure Mobley's best skill right now is as a primary rim protector. I think he does better on in individual matchups and as a free safety. Obviously, you lose the free safety part if you go put him on KD. It's just go hide. But I think the idea is maybe you bait it out a little bit, and you just hope that the rest of your defense can just do enough. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there's no guarantee Mobley actually stops KD either. So, you know, that's the problem with KD. He provides no good solution.
Right. You just want to have someone that's going to stick with him, right? Like, don't leave him wide open, because he's going to make the tough shots. He's going to make the open ones at an even higher clip. And
yeah, the only road to a, like, I don't know, 8 for 23 night for KD, to me, is a mix of Lamar, a healthy doses of Lamar and Evan as the primary. Because he's gotten too good at passing out of hard doubles that I just think Laurie is going to be at such a disadvantage. And without Jarrett there, because, like, you can get away with Lowry as the primary defender when you have immediate help and more backline help in the form of Jarrett and Evan. When mm-hmm. you only have one of those two, I just think that facade kind of falls apart. And now you're kind of just hoping that Lowry can play, or I'm sorry, you know, any of the other bigs can kind of play 3-on-2 defense, and I just don't know if they can. So I don't know. I would consider it hard, because I also do not think the Nets are going to expect it.
No, and I almost feel like this is a game where I wouldn't hate to see a fair amount of Lowry, Love, and Mobley. Like, I think, especially with Garland and LeVert, you might just need to have Kevin Love out there more, because this is a situation where his experience is going to be very valuable. He was very good against Brooklyn on Friday, and I think you brought up a very important point of the way that he can go out there and compete with Andre Drummond and keep him off of the offensive glass. I think that absolutely Kevin Love needs to be, I would say Kevin Love needs to be one of the Cavs' best four players on Tuesday if they're going to have a chance to win. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, and I also think that the Cavs are going to need to ask Bruce Brown to be the Nets' second or third best player. And I think the only way you survive those Love-Lowry lineups is you say, hey, we really hope that we can keep Drummond off the boards and that Brown misses a bunch of wide-ass open threes. I mean, mm-hmm. the Lance Stephenson treatment is probably going to have to be in play. And they're just going to have to hope he has a bad day. I mean, when you watch teams try to guard the Nets, like I was watching that Pacers game, there it is a degree of just take your least bad option. And sometimes against that, with that much offensive firepower, because, by the way, these role players are also awesome on offense. I mean, yeah. Seth Curry, Patty Mills. I mean, Dragic still has a little bit of juice. Like, you'd rather a Bruce Brown wide open three, even if he's not bad at shooting threes. Sometimes you just got to hope that the numbers play in your favor and that Bruce Brown, in one of the first big games of his career, just freaks out a little bit. Like, those are the things you kind of have to gamble on when you're at a talent deficiency, because playing straight up is probably not going to win you this game.
Yeah, and this is one of those spots where I think the Cavs having a letdown game and blowing it against the Orlando Magic is going to hurt them, because when you look at the NBA, typically defense travels a whole lot better than offense. And I think the performance that you could expect out of a Bruce Brown would be different if the game was in Cleveland. I do think that it has an impact on the role players. It doesn't have any impact on KD and Kyrie. Like, that variable is going to stay the same no matter where the location is. But this is one of those things where I think the Cavs, you could tell in that Friday game, they came out tight. And I think they come out with a little more confidence if the game is in Cleveland. Again, these are the learning experiences that you'd hope a young team would learn from. But I really do think the fact that they kind of experienced those nerves on Friday and they've seen this opponent so recently, I do think that that's going to better help them have a hot start to the game, or at least a strong start. Because if you can play those KD minutes to about even, I think that is a major major, major key.
I don't know if that matters because I think KD's going to play 44 minutes if it's in doubt.
Really?
I think Nash is going to ride him. And Nash, I mean, he played 41 in an 11-point win.
You know, that's a good point. I mean, and the Nets did have to play a lot of minutes on Sunday as well to get by the Indiana Pacers, which was a really interesting game to watch as the Cavs got to take on the Wisconsin Herd. Indy gave the Nets a good run for their money. And man, if they would have won that game, we would be talking about a home playing game against the Charlotte Hornets, which is a totally different dynamic.
It was crazy
than what the Cavs are dealing with on Tuesday.
Yeah, but I just think like Nat, I think ex players tend to ride guys harder. That's a totally anecdotal thing, but like I think they're just like, yeah, would I want to play 48 minutes in this game?
That's probably part of the reason why they wanted Steve Nash to be their coach, right?
Yeah, I'm totally there. By the way, I still like Steve Nash. I feel like there's a quiet undercurrent of dissatisfaction. I think he's had the weirdest possible year, and they still won 44 games. It's not their fault that the East got suddenly super good.
Yeah,
like I don't know. I think this team is super dangerous, but they are imperfect. Again, they are imperfect. I wonder how sharp they come out. I know that's not a particularly like verifiable thing, but like, are they going to say it's playoff time? Let's kill these dudes. I don't think they will.
You brought this up. I'm so happy you brought this up because I thought the exact same thing. And my conclusion was you are being a homer that is looking for an additional reason for optimism. That's what I was telling myself, because I'm wondering that as well, because you have to imagine that the Nets feel pretty confident that if they were to drop this game, that they could take care of business against the winner of the Hawks and Hornets, like especially with John Collins out, Gordon Hayward's been ruled out for the play-in, and he's been an important contributor for Charlotte as well this season. Like, you have to imagine that they're confident, but at the same time, they probably value the rest. Like, there are older players on this roster, and they probably want to take care of business on Tuesday. I guess the other factor is they can kind of pick their opponent a little bit. Like, do you really think they'd rather play Miami or Boston? But that's probably getting a little too cute.
Yeah, I don't think they're game theorying out like that. I think they can beat either one in their heart of hearts.
Who would you give them a better chance against, though? Like, while we're here,
I would say Boston, just because I wonder how much the rest of the team shot making. I think Tatum's shot making will hold, but will Brown's? Mm-hmm. Will Marcus Smart's? I think people are just ever so slightly overrating Boston. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just so ever so, including myself all season, ever so slightly underrating Miami. That was a beat up team this year, and they walked away with the one seed. Yeah. And I think that Miami's best is better than Boston's best.
Well, especially with Robert Williams out of the lineup, yeah. Like I think that has a real dramatic impact, because as soon as they slid him over to the four and kind of had him play the Mobley role next to Al Horford, like that changed the entire dynamic. And I mean, Carter, honestly, you'd be forgiven if you came on this podcast and weren't a believer in playoff Al Horford. I honestly understand where you're coming from on that one. But while we're in the predictions business here, what do you see happening in the 9-10 game? Because obviously, while we feel the Cavs have a chance against the Nets, there's a very realistic possibility that the Cavs may be playing on Friday, hosting the second play-in game, which of course is the significant portion of them getting the 8 seed rather than the 9-10, which, I mean, is a massive, massive relief, because you're at least guaranteed two bites at the apple here.
Yeah, less about two bites at the apple and not having one bite at the apple, which is like having to, like, losing and going home in the 9-10 is so punitive, and it should be probably because you're in the 9-10, but mm-hmm. Yes, ducking that is so important. I don't know, it's hard to, like, both of these teams are so volatile, and I think there is a degree of Cavs fans who feel pretty good about getting into the playoffs even if we lose to Brooklyn, and mm-hmm. I get that to feel pretty good, but I wouldn't feel great. Either one of these teams, I think even more so than this current Cavs team, are capable of exploding mm-hmm. on any given night. and beating any team in a one-game playoff. And if I'm Brooklyn, I'm not trying to mess around. Like, no. I don't want to play either of these teams. Trae Young can drop 50 on any given night, and that offense can start humming, and Herter and Bogdanovich and Gallo just won't stop missing threes. Same goes for Charlotte. Both of these teams are super, super explosive offensively when the time is right. And I don't know. I guess I'm going to pick Atlanta because they'll all be at home. I think they've got more pedigree. They've played in these kind of games. And I remember early in the season, maybe it was another player on the team, but they were talking about how they were actually struggling because they felt like they were still playing playoff basketball pace in their mind. Like they were still playing slow and kind of tight. And I wonder if just those extra reps of knowing kind of what it feels like will kind of be the difference for them. I mean, I'd certainly rather play Charlotte than Atlanta. I don't know how you feel about it.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I have a healthy fear of Trae Young, and I mean, you would assume that the scamming gets called different in the playoffs, but this is the play-in. I mean, that's a totally different dynamic. I don't know how this is going to go.
And also, he didn't scam his way all on the way to taking his team to the East Finals last year.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he instead got to play a very fake team in the New York Knicks in a weird COVID year, and then the Sixers beat themselves, as they're going to do again this year. But he was legitimately good, and I have a healthy fear of Trae Young. And the other factor is, like, even if Jared Allen is back for the Friday game, if there is one, that's a team that has been playing without John Collins for a while, and they've actually been playing better basketball since he's been down, and they've been on a hot streak. Like, they've been playing playoff basketball for a while. They know who they are. They have multiple weapons. I would give the Cavs maybe a slight edge in that game if that's what it comes down to, but I think, like, it's still going to be a really, really tough matchup, and I wouldn't be comfortable putting a bet on it or anything along those lines. Like, that is a really good team that has more experience, that has been healthier. They aren't as worn down as the Cavs have been, but I guess there is an advantage in getting this 7-8 seed, where you get the 2 days of rest going into Friday if you have it, rather than playing a sudden death game on the Wednesday. So I think that helps from a rest and recuperation standpoint. Obviously, it gives us a little more hope that maybe Jared Allen will be back if that game is necessary. I'm personally hoping that it's not, obviously, but this slide would be so worthwhile if it ended with the Cavs beating Brooklyn. Like, that would be such a fun story. Like, that is something we could rally around for so long, especially without Jared Allen and Sexton. Like, it is just so, it would be so much fun to beat Kyrie, to beat Drummond, to beat Seth Curry, former Cavalier as well. And
Cavaliers
Kevin Durant,
legend.
Like, yeah, Cavaliers legend Seth Curry, who played his only game in the only game that I ever covered as Cavs media. But especially the fact that the last time the Cavs played in a game this magnitude, Kevin Durant was on the other side as well. Like, there's a fun full circle element
to
this.
We're playing Kyrie. Like, that's it couldn't be more fun.
How gutted would you be if in 2018 you were told that the next time the Cavs were in the postseason, you would once again be playing Kevin Durant, you would not have LeBron James, and you would also be playing against Kyrie Irving? What would that do to your mind?
It would break it. And if you said that team had squeaked in as the seventh seed, I'd be even more blown away.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I don't know. I think that I feel like there is a degree of, I feel like the larger basketball community is really underrating how high variance one game tournaments are.
Yep.
Like anyone can win these games. Like, there is a degree of, like, defeatism from Cavs fans. We're like, okay, we'll do our best against Brooklyn, but then our real game is against Atlanta or Charlotte. And I'm like, no, they can win.
I don't think that way.
I know they're big dogs. I think the last number I saw was +8. But the reality is, our college basketball compatriots get to see this every single March. Worst teams win all the time. Less talented teams win all the time. So, like, I just don't see why, like, you would move past this one. I'm going to be emotionally charged up immediately for this game.
Me too. I'm very excited. I personally know I've unveiled this take before. But I think the process of making the play-in and the play-in experience here and trying to make the playoffs, I think that's going to be more valuable than an actual playoff series. Because I don't think either of us would favor the Cavs against Miami or Boston. I think those are really tough matchups, especially even if Jared Allen comes back, like coming back after like 5 weeks off here. That's a pretty tough task. But I do think the value in the playoffs, if they do get through, which we're obviously hoping for, is that's going to be their first taste for a lot of these guys of game planning for the same team over and over again, multiple times, because you don't get the chance to do a lot of game planning in the regular season. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you learn when you go to the playoffs for the first time. But in terms of rising to the moment, experiencing this type of pressure, you're going to be on national television again. Like there's a lot going into the mix in these games. And I'm very excited to see how they respond to it, because win or lose, this is really, really valuable experience. And this is what we were hoping to get from the Cavs going into this. Carter, I can't believe we made it this long without talking about the fact that Evan Mobley returned. Since we last podcasted, Evan Mobley came back and that man just rolled out of bed and was awesome again. Like the two games that he had, he obviously took care of business against Milwaukee and their third strings. Nobody on the team could do anything with them. Thank goodness he didn't piss off the Nassas, because I was worried about a cheap shot or something along those lines. But Mobley looked awesome. I thought he played really well against the Nets. And I think him getting these two games prior to this playing tournament, I think that's going to be really valuable, because he looked well rested. He looked healthy. Like once again, we saw it with Garland, we saw it with LeVert, and we saw it with Mobley now. Like when these guys come back from injuries, I haven't had any questions this year that, okay, they're healthy enough to play. Like they come back, they look ready, they look conditioned, and I think that's a feather in the cap for the training staff here.
Yeah, I agree. It is so nice to see him back. I do want to say this, though. I think the number the stat I'm most looking forward to as a barometer for how the game is going is defensive rebounds in this game.
Sexy. I think very, very sexy.
I know. I think he only had, he only had three defensive rebounds against Brooklyn.
It's got to be better.
On the eighth. And I think that he's going to have to be in the double digits. It's going to be so important for the Cavs to finish possessions. And you know, Love, as good as he's been on the defensive boards, who, by the way, had 9 boards in his 21 minutes, five on the defensive end. I just think, like, if you give this team extra possessions, and this Cavs team has been bit by good offensive rebounding all year long, if you give them extra possessions, they have no chance of winning.
Yeah,
I genuinely believe that. The Nets outright rebounded them by 14 in that last game. I think the battle has to be close, and that's even including the fact that we're probably going to miss more shots than Brooklyn, just as a point of procedure. So, that feels like such an important thing for him to go out and, you know, K-Love talked about after the Milwaukee game, talked about the increased physicality of the postseason. Locked On Cavs had a nice soundbite from that presser in their last episode. And Mobley was sitting right next to him. And like, I hope Mobley's ready for Andre Drummond's elbows to dig in under his ribs and to fight back and be really attentive. Because playoff defense is so stressful that sometimes it's so easy to forget that you have to finish the possession. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's going to be a focus thing and an intentionality thing for them on that side of the ball, because they do not have the personnel to block this Nets team out well. It's going to have to be straight up effort and intentionality. And I really, I don't think we can win if they don't police the defensive boards. Mm-hmm. And Evan's going to have to be the table setter, because I'll bet that dude plays 42, 43 minutes tomorrow night.
I really hope that when the Cavs win tomorrow, someone cuts the clip of you saying, I don't think we can win, and just pulls it completely out of context. I really am hoping for that, where you weren't able to watch
the game. Well, you functionally guaranteed it.
And you go to Twitter, and that's what you get, is accusations that you did not watch the game and that you didn't think that the Cavs could win. That's what I'm really hoping for here.
Well, if we win, I don't care. You can say whatever you want about me.
That's very, very fair. Oh, man, it was so good to have Mobley back, because, like, I think Garland is obviously the most electric player on this team. Like, he is by far the most fun. But Mobley being back makes the Cavs feel like the Cavs. And yeah. We're still not all the way there, obviously, like the trio of Garland, Mobley, and Allen. God. We only got to play 40 games together this year.
I miss that dude so much. I cannot believe how much I miss that dude. I was doing the dishes today, thinking about high-low pick and rolls when teams high-low passes from the when teams blitz Darius in the pick and roll, and he would just find Evan at the free throw line. Evan would take one dribble. Jarrett would cut in from the dunker spot, get a wide open lob, and it was just so easy, Justin.
I mean, you saw it, like, just what Moses Brown brought, and Jared Allen is just such a level above that.
Can I ask, should Moses get any minutes tomorrow night?
God, I wish we had Dean Wade.
Yeah, I know.
Gut says no.
Gut
says Kev has to play those minutes.
Like, yeah, and if he doesn't got it, you just got to hold your L.
Yeah, I think so. I think you got to shorten the rotation. I like what Moses has brought to the table, but we saw the ways that he can be exploited defensively by elite offensive players.
Did we see the same 9-man rotation that you'd want to see in that Brooklyn game? They played Markkanen, Okoro, Mobley, Garland, LeVert, Love, Stevens, Osman, and then just a smattering of minutes for Rondo.
Yeah.
That seems right to me.
That seems right to me. I do think that there's a value to Rondo getting to play more games over the last week. I think he can actually bring a fair bit to the table. Like, I think especially if Okoro isn't necessarily bringing what we're hoping he's bringing, I think you can go to that 2-point guard look with he and Garland, because I think he looked a little more crisp. He looked a little more into it. And like what he looked like on Friday, pretty much fresh coming back from an injury, I would expect that to be very similar to what Dragic looks like if Brooklyn even decides to play him, where there's a little bit of rust, you're making a read a half second slow, and that's the type of possessions that can kill you in a game like this. But I would like to see maybe a little bit more Rondo.
I'm fine with it. I think that is the guy who gets more minutes, but not, I don't think a 10th man gets on the floor.
No,
and shouldn't. I think you have to ride with who you've got. And
I think Rondo helps unlock Jetty too, right? Like when Jetty's leaking out full court, Rondo's someone that has his head up and is capable of making those passes. And I think when you have someone that's out there that's able to find you in those types of situations, you run a little bit harder, right? Because you know that you're going to get rewarded for that effort. So would like to see a little bit more Rondo. Let's get into predictions, Carter.
Hold on. I want to ask you a couple more questions, because I just got them on the brain. I want to get them out. We got a little extra time before this thing ends.
Okay.
Darius Garland should play X number of minutes if the game is competitive.
40.
43 would be my pick. I'm riding my young guy the rest of the way.
Yeah, he's 22, and worst case, you have 2 days off after this. Like, he can play 40 minutes. I'm very here for it, and I think you would probably have to fight him if you wanted to keep him off the court for longer than that. So I think that's about the sweet spot. What's your next question, Carter?
The role player most likely to impact the game positively for the Cavaliers is?
Kevin Love. Absolutely. Like, I think the experience he brings to the table, just the leadership on and off the court, like, I think him in the huddle is going to make a big difference in ways that aren't going to necessarily be obvious. But I'm sure if you listen to guys in the exit interviews whenever this season ends for the Cavs, I think having Kevin Love in moments like this is so invaluable for this team.
I agree. The player who can swing the game between Lamar Stevens, Jetty Osman, and Rajon Rondo. who is the most likely to?
Oh, God, that's a good one. I thought you were going to lump in Okoro, so I was going to pick him. Because I think if Okoro has a great game, that makes such a huge difference for the Cavs. Out of that mix, I'm going to go Jetty.
Me too. I think Jetty has some weird fearless energy and could hit three or four threes and really change the complexion of the game. He could also completely shoot that. I think it is only fitting that the most high variance player on the team this season will have has the most high variance potential in terms of winning or losing us this game.
Look, we know better than anyone. Like, a rational confidence guy can go out there and make a really big difference in scenarios like this, especially if you're talking about a one game scenario. I definitely think that this is a game like you would expect Jetty to come out, give some effort, take some wild shots, and we'll see if they go in. Like, that's probably what this is going to come down to.
Got a couple more rapid fires for you because I'm just having fun now.
All right.
The wing
deal, baby.
The wing that is more important for the Cavs winning the game, Karis or Isaac?
Karis.
Isaac.
I think it's Karis because I think you need to outscore Brooklyn. Like, I think you absolutely need that offense more than you need Okoro's defense. Like, I do think Okoro has a really big swing factor, but I think Karis needs 25 points.
I think Karis doesn't need 25 points because I think Darius can... There's a world in which Darius goes so nuts that it's okay. I think Isaac has to... He's got to get to double digits somehow. I know it's not a huge bar, but it's one he hasn't cleared much lately. And I am very interested to kind of see how he figures it out. But that's all my rapid fire questions, Justin. I made them all up on the spot, but I liked them all.
I like them too, Carter. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Do you want to give us a prediction now, Mr. Question Man?
I think the Nets are going to win. And I think it's going to be either an absolute blowout where the Nets come out focused and exert their talent advantage early on and put the Cavs out of reach early, or this thing is going down to the wire and it will be a coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll predict Nets, but I do not think that the Cavs are out of this 1-1 bet. I think there's a lot of roads to a victory.
I think this is going to be a coin flip type scenario. I think that the Cavs are going to be within a possession or two with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. That's the way that I see this playing out. And because there's no consequences to our predictions, I want to take the other side. I want to take the optimistic side and say Cavs, even though my gut isn't necessarily there, my heart is there, Carter. So I'm going to pick the Cavs and, continue to be the audience favorite out of the two of us.
Yeah, though you just basically said you don't think they're going to win.
At the end of the day, people are here for the headline, Carter. And the headline, Cavs win. Wine and gold winner, baby.
Hell yeah, brother. Let's go.
And on that note, let's hope that we're right. I'm very excited to see this week, man. I'm a little bummed out that you won't be able to podcast with me on Wednesday to recap this game, but we have Mac Robinson joining us, so I'm very excited to have him back on the podcast. For everyone tuning in on YouTube, thank you so much for all your support. If you want to support the podcast, make sure you like, subscribe, click the notification bell. If you're listening via podcast, leave us rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.